we've been doing wrong?
We've been playing the notes on the page.
Playing music is supposed to be fun. It's about heart. It's about feelings and moving people and something beautiful and being alive. And it's not about notes on a page.
Thank you, Mr. Holland, and welcome to episode 4 of the Ukulele Brain Podcast. I am your host, Douglas Reynolds, of the upcoming and returning Reno Ukulele Festival, September 29th to October 2nd at the Nugget Resort in Sparks, Nevada. If you're joining us for the first time today, I highly recommend you go back and at least listen to the beginning of the first episode so you know what the first part of these podcasts are all about. But I'll give you a short brush up here. Before our interview, I give a little physical exercise to do that should assist your ukulele brain in making new neural pathways or connections to assist you in however you play, however you learn, however you are studying the ukulele. In the last episode, we looked at the notes EF and BC, which are the lowest line and space on the music notation staff, and the middle line and space above on the music notation staff. And we had you play them in two different positions, and we had you sing along with them. Why do we have you sing along with playing the notes? Because your brain builds connections best when it is receiving data from multiple senses. So, beginning with the open second string, that is an E, and the first fret of the second string, an F, we did this. E, F, E, F, E, F, and then we did it in another position on the third string, fourth and fifth frets. E, F, E, F, E, F. Then we did the B, C pair on the first string, second and third frets. B, C, B, C, B, C. And then on the second string, seventh and eighth frets. B, C, B, C, B, C. Today, we're going to connect those pairs. So, again, the EF is the bottom line of the staff of music notation, and the space above that, the BC, is the center line on the staff and the space above that. So, we're going to connect those lines and spaces with the G and the A that are in between those pairs. Now, the EF and BC are the only letters of the musical alphabet that do not have a sharp or flat in between them. So every other pair does, which means every other pair will be two frets apart, whereas these are one fret apart. The first way we're going to approach this is, again, with the open position, starting with the open second string, the EF. Then we're going to go to the third fret of the second string, which is a G. We'll then go to the open first string, which is an A, and then again the second and third frets, which is BC. So here we go. E, F, G, A, B, C. E, F, G, A, B, C. E, F, G, A, B, C. All right, now we're going to go to that other position, and we're going to keep all these notes closed. So we're going to start with the third string, fourth and fifth frets. And then we're going to jump to the second string, third fret, second string, fifth fret, and then up to that BC on the seventh and eighth frets of the second string. So here we go. Fourth fret of the third string, E, F, second string, third fret, G, fifth fret, A, seventh and eighth, B, C, E, F, G, A, B, C. So to do those two positions of those two sets of notes for a minute or two, 2 to 3 times a day, and eventually that will build the connections in your brain, so you won't have to think about that anymore. You'll know that the B, C, and E, F are the only pairs of notes that do not have a sharp or flat in between them, so they're only one fret apart. You'll know that the bottom line and space of the treble clef staff is E, F, and you're working your way up as follows, E, F, G, A, B, C, line, space, line, space, line, space. Whether or not you ever get into actually reading music notation, it's good to have that in the back of your mind. Your ukulele brain will thank you, and you'll be able to look at that treble clef at a glance and know where those notes fall on your ukulele fretboard. All right, so now let's get into today's interview with Danny Joy and Perry Stauffer, all the way from Portland, Oregon. We are 86 degrees down here. What are you doing up there? Rain? Terminal rain?
Ooh, it's probably 72.
We've had sunshine.
Oh, good.
Overcast.
It's spring.
Light breeze.
Every time I've been to Portland, it's been raining. So.
Oh.
So it's good. It makes it green, though. We have no green here.
Oh, it's very green, and it has been rainy. It's
it's volatile here. You never know what to expect.
Yeah. So when I talk to a couple, I have to start with the same thing. In my 15 plus years in the uke world now, I think there's 5 couples have formed over that time. So just quickly, how did you meet and how did it become musical?
It started musical. Actually.
Do you want to?
Oh.
We met in the recording studio, actually.
Yeah, I had co-written the song with somebody, and he decided to have it recorded in Sacramento. And so I went in the morning and recorded my vocals, and then I left to go do a little gig, and I almost didn't come back, but then I thought, I want to find out, you know, it's 5 years ago. I said, I want to see some of the more recording. I know the bass player's coming in this afternoon. So I did my gig, and I drove all the way back and pulled up at the same time Perry did.
Mm-hmm. And I was late. I stopped to get a burrito. and if I hadn't, I don't think our paths would have ever crossed.
Yeah, you know, James and I had, for you listeners, James, my son-in-law now, had a discussion of, you know, the turns in the road and what if and all of that. And Sarah Maisel asked him to play with her at the Uke Fest in his hometown in England. And he also had a jazz gig, which isn't his normal gig. He'd never played with the ukulele player. And so it was like, do my normal gig or what's this backing a ukulele player? And he just decided to choose that. And that turned into recording, and that turned into showing up at the Reno Uke Fest, and then me seeing him and go, I think Jessica might like this guy. And all of the stuff, you know, if I would have taken the other gig, none of this would have happened. So it's really cool. It's just fun to see how that all came about. So Danny, I can't start this without talking about your dad. Stu was a good friend to me and so many people in the music world, and bailed me out in the early days of the Reno Uke Fest by doing sound and all of that. And we were married a week apart in 1978. No, your dad and I weren't married. We married our wives a week apart in 1978. Uh-huh.
and just had a lot of things in common, types of music we liked and everything. So your style, which is very melodic and, you know, no normal open cowboy chords to speak of, you know, is there influence from Stu in that, in how you play now?
Oh, that's a good question. I suppose my influence from my dad would have been always have fun with it. Don't take it too seriously. Experiment and try songs. If you come across something, he'd always be, you'd walk by his room, because we taught side by side for 4 years, 5 years maybe. And every time you walk by and he didn't have a student, he'd say, hey, come in here, look at this. You know, he was always exploring and just playing the music that he loved. And he would always take it to the next level. He was never just strumming. He would usually do the little licks, you know, like you said, he liked the Beatles and the Monkees and like classic rock from the 70s. So he would always figure out a little lick or riff that was iconic to the song. But I think having fun with it mostly is what I could take away from my relationship with him.
I think the last time I saw him was in the shop, and I was just pulling ukes off the wall, and I did a, you know, instrumental. I was just standing there doing, I think I was playing Strawberry Fields or something. And he said, yeah, that's really good. Come show me how you're doing that. You know, he was always interested in you know, learning and expanding and all of that. So,
and he wasn't afraid to do, cool. You know, he wasn't afraid that he wouldn't be able to remember or he had other things to do. He was just.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he did sound for, David Gates from Bread, mm-hmm. and then another friend, John Batdorf, I think you've met him at some of the festivals. He opened often for Bread. So there's these interesting connections over the years once you get into music, who's done what with who and all of that. So most recently you've collaborated with our mutual friend, Daniel Ho, uh-huh. and I think you're a really good match because you're both melodic, pretty melodies, slow, introspective type things. So why don't you talk about that a little bit, your recent recordings and, you know, anything you want to talk about?
Yeah, I like that you're wearing Daniel's shirt today.
Yeah, that was an accident. I have mostly black shirts, and I just reach into the void and grab one, and I put it on and looked in here and said, oh, well, that's appropriate. Yeah.
Yes, working with Daniel Ho, he and I connected. We knew each other a little bit, but we really connected at your festival in Reno. Perry and I were playing out in the lobby at the new, before you went to the other venue.
Yeah,
Peppermill. Yeah, and right after our set, he ran out from his lesson that he was giving, and he goes, "Oh man, I missed it. I wanted to play with you guys." I was like, "Oh my God, did you hear what he just said?"
Mm-hmm. I do.
And then he emailed me a week later, as did you. I guess you guys might have discussed it or something. It was too much of a coincidence. And he said, "You know, I really see something in you, and I think that you could be a real artist if you write your own music. Do you write your own music?" And I said, "Well, yeah, you know, I had a bunch of pieces of things, but I'd been focusing on covers and teaching at the time. And so I put together everything that I had. I put it all in MuseScore and sent it to him. And we started this long distance relationship from Grass Valley, California to his place in Santa Monica. And I would send him ideas and then he would send back alterations based on his colorful sounds theories and his compositional techniques. And then he encouraged me to take his class on Yamaha, so I did. And I didn't realize it came with a PDF, so I sat and studied and hand wrote my notes and rewatched the videos over and over and over.
What's the name of his class on that Yamaha produces?
Musician Lab, I think, but I think it's called Colorful Sounds.
Colorful Sounds, yeah.
Maybe.
It's a really neat class. I'm sorry to break your flow, but I just wanted to make sure that people knew that that's out there because it's a really terrific course.
Yeah, and from the beginning, he kept saying, as an artist, you want to be completely different than everybody else. You want the titles of your songs to be completely unique. When someone Googles it, you don't want another thing to pop up. You want yours, you know. And then he said something about the cover, and I said, oh yeah, I went to school. And he goes, oh, you're an artist. So he kept calling me an artist, an artist, an artist. And it had been 10 years since I had been in art school. And when I got home, I dove into ukulele. My dad had the store. I started teaching. I started working with the festivals. I'm really interested in event planning and hospitality and things like that. But I had put aside my visual art. So he kept saying, well, you're an artist. You should do the cover. You should do the cover. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, oh no, nails biting. You know, can I even do visual art anymore? And once the pandemic hit, I set up a studio out in our little barn in Grass Valley, and I just got to work. And I realized that I had been a frustrated artist for 10 years. I had been denying myself the freedom to work with watercolors and imagery and like just express. And so from the beginning, with him saying, you're an artist, he said, you should also illustrate these songs. We can have an illustrated songbook, and it will just be this all-encompassing artistic expression that's like nothing that anybody else is doing. And it sparked my excitement. Perry was completely supportive of the whole process, me being out in the studio for hours at a time. And now I've got half a dozen songs on that album. We're going to be writing and recording more over the next year so that we can have a full album. We're talking about doing a musical together, because yeah. He did a musical and I attended it, and I was watching and I was thinking, we can do our own. So we're going to do a musical based off of the songs from the album. And it's just completely changed my life, completely. And I don't know why I needed someone else to give me permission to be an artist. I would always say I was one, but I was secretly a little bit denying myself the privilege. And now, it's just, I'm having so much fun. I'm learning about all kinds of different art to tie in with the music.
I think musicians and visual artists and creative types are naturally hesitant to put themselves out there without somebody, you know, pushing them a little bit. But then with somebody who's as successful as he has been, giving you the little push, I think the sky's the limit. I remember, I don't remember which show it was. I think it was Palm Springs. You did a set at our festival, and it was mostly covers. And then you did a couple other ones. And I think I told you, do your own stuff, because it's good. You know, it's good stuff.
Yeah.
And now you can reverse the thing. I still love to hear a cover translated into somebody's personality. Uh-huh. They don't give them up completely, but I think it's 90% your own stuff is the way to go. And it's the development I've heard over the 10, 12 years I've known you is really noticeable. And Daniel and I talk about you behind your back all the time. So.
Cool.
yeah. So, Perry, you play more than bass, but is bass your main instrument?
It was when I, before, in the before times, I was a bass player and I would play gigs all around with lots of different bands, and I got a lot of work that way. I mean, I lived in a pretty relatively small town, but there were a lot of bands, and there were a lot of bands playing different types of vintage music. So if you play an upright bass in a place like that, you get a lot of work. So probably the last 10 years I was playing bass almost exclusively. But now we've put so much time into, mostly we're doing the academy and working on and doing a lot of performance that supports our teaching and so forth. And so I've been playing probably, at least for the last year, I've been probably ukulele has sort of become my main instrument. And
yeah, I mean, it sort of gets to all of us. I just, because I've got hand problems, joint problems in my hands. I've been trying to figure out what I can play, because the ukulele being small and I have really big palms, mm-hmm. crunching my hand onto a ukulele is sort of painful now. Mm-hmm. And I've found that going back to my original guitar, even though the string tension's a little more, that bigger neck is easier on mm-hmm. me. I have experimented with different, there's some ukuleles that have a little bit wider neck.
I have I play a grand tenor, which is a Romero ukulele. And it was a revelation for me to find one that actually had the wider fingerboard. Mm-hmm. I would gravitate normally towards baritone ukuleles or even a tenor guitar, because I couldn't form a lot of the chords because my fingers are too wide, but this one changed everything for me.
I see people posting all the time about, you know, getting into U-bass and that sort of thing. But a U-bass is tuned exactly like a regular bass, which is tuned exactly like the lower four strings on a guitar. Mm-hmm. And there are in between, there's got a gold tone micro bass on the wall here, which is like an in-between size between a U-bass and a small regular bass. Can you just tell listeners that would, you know, might be interested in U-bass or figuring out whether they want to get into that, your impression of playing a tiny little U-bass versus if you've played any of the medium ones versus playing a regular one, any suggestions just from somebody who's played it, what might be the easiest thing to get into?
Sure. The smallest ukulele basses with the rubber strings, they have a wonderful, warm, soft tone. It emulates kind of a stand-up bass in the way the note blooms slowly, and it's very rich. The drawback is you have to use an amplifier. It's not going to produce enough acoustic tone on its own. So if you're going to be going to jams and stuff, you better be prepared to bring a small amp. If you want to go a little bit larger, there are basses that are a little bit longer in scale. They're not as long as a regular bass guitar, but they produce the volume unamplified that is comparable to a normal ukulele. Mm-hmm. So Danny and I, we have an Ohana bass. It's a 25-inch scale, as opposed to a 23, and we get about the same level. We do performances with that and a ukulele all the time without having to use any kind of amplifier whatsoever. So well, for us, that works really well.
On that note too, I wanna say, you asked him about if bass or uke was his main. We've kind of done a swap over the past year. I've been playing bass because of the Ohana acoustic bass. It's so small, you know. I picked up one of Perry's regular size things and I went, there's no way. It's way too much work on my shoulders. You know, I have rotator cuff issues on the right shoulder from all the playing and improper posture for so many years. So I've been having a lot of fun with that new, and we just got the Deho Signature. He just came out with a recording ready professional grade instrument. So we just got one of those, which has been also fun. So now we got two of them around the house, which is nice because we can keep one downstairs and one upstairs.
this gold tone came originally with rubber strings, but I had James swap for the steel.
They make a flat wound for that bass, right?
Yeah, this is not a flat wound. I was just going to ask that. But it feels more like, I mean, it's got some good volume just acoustically.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds nice. Do you know what the scale length is for that? That looks longer than the
23.
Okay.
So, and it really plays well, and he's played it at several of the festivals, and I don't play bass much, but it just to sit in here and bump, 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 you know, it's got some nice projection on it. But back to the U-bass, the idea of, you know, Road Toad, I don't know, do you know the Road Toad guy?
I don't.
he invented the U-Bass, basically a solid electric version, and Kala bought it from him. And then they made their own acoustic version. And they're very small. Have you noticed any intonation issues with the really small necks?
Yeah, I mean, the really short ones, the strings are very loose, so it's hard to get good intonation. It's hard to get a good sound up the neck. So if I'm playing one of those, I usually approach it. I usually just stay down in the sweet spot. If I'm playing an instrument like that, I don't, and Danny will probably concur, we don't normally do anything that requires us to get high up the neck. It's mostly
okay. And I was just going to ask Danny your opinion on the same thing. What do you play? What do you play the Ohana or?
I really only have experience with the Ohana. I will say that, so we play the Ohana OBU-22. And then Daniel just came out with his signature version. He did a signature version because the original was having some trouble with intonation. Perry experimented with some different strings for that one. And with the gold tone.
Yeah, actually, there's a gold tone bass string that's made by Labella for gold tone for the micro bass.
And now it's just heavenly. It's just wonderful. Yeah. So I think maybe just switching strings out sometimes can solve that kind of an issue.
You got to have the right tension, and then if you switch the strings, then you usually have to...
And the tone.
Look at if the tension changes on an instrument, you should look at adjusting the truss rod accordingly. But anyway, those strings with that bass are a revelation.
Really nice.
Yeah, I had a gold tone solid body electric that I just sold, and it was fretless. And not being from that world, I was afraid of trying to mess with fretless. But you know, the fret lines are there. So you know, you can get used to the hand positions, and I found it really preferable to me just in messing around, because you can tweak, you know, you can listen and you can tweak the sound where you can't with the fret. Mm-hmm. You know, that whole thing is pretty cool. I didn't say this at the beginning, but Perry and Danny Joy will be at the upcoming Reno Ukulele Festival. And September 29th.
So excited about that.
I've already done my shopping. I'm going to be totally going Mrs. Maisel on this.
Are you?
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, marvelous.
Yes, yes. And we'll do some bass classes there to help you all out. Those of you who are wanting to get into it or who have one and don't know why, what to do with it?
We've been teaching duets since Danny started playing the bass and I started playing. You know, we've been switching back and forth, and we've been kind of putting together little duets of songs, where we'll teach the bass part and the ukulele part, so people can have
couples can play
a whole song.
You know.
Yeah.
I want to make a note about being a woman playing the bass. It is badass, man. Ass right now, but you might have to cut that.
I think if you say bad, you make it into a compound word,
maybe just then don't it's say okay, it again.
Badass.
Hey, talking heads, bangles.
Like, you know? Right, and you don't see that many of them, but you know, the Wrecking Crew and all this. But again, just like with my art, I don't know. I thought maybe the bass wasn't for me. I picked it up. Daniel wrote a bass line for one of the songs on our album. He said you should learn how to play this so that you can play it on this bass. On the stage, and I'll play uke. And I went, me on the bass? But once I started playing around, man, it's different than ukulele, because with ukulele, I mostly keep my fingers really tall, and I do a lot of campanella, which is where a lot of notes are ringing out together, like little bells.
You're always playing chords.
And you always want to hold down part of it while you play melody so that you get that droning sound. And so it's a totally different technique. On bass, you kind of want to do the opposite, because you really only want one note ringing at once. So I can flatten my hand down. I can let my fingers fall onto the strings behind. And actually, I have to stop it from ringing. And so I can get into this like really funky kind of groove and stuff. And I get to play the same thing over and over for like the verse while Perry's doing his fun little ukulele accompaniment. And then I lead us to the next section. So it's just kind of been empowering as a girl playing. And when you hit that low E string or any notes on that string, it like reverberates like a bass voice, you know. It's just really cool.
Would you say
you can feel it in your chest? I mean,
I'm expressing myself in a way that I never had before because you get that low frequency. It's just intense.
Also,
are you singing while playing the bass?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Cool.
Now, would you say learning the bass has made you a better ukulele player?
I would say so. Yeah. Timing, you know, I've been working with a metronome now for the last few years. That's something I didn't start out with in my practicing. So yeah, I think also I understand better, like when you're learning a walking bass line, you're walking, a lot of times you're walking into the next chord. So you're leading the band into what the next chord's going to be. You're not just staying on a chord like you do with ukulele. So you got to kind of think ahead a little bit.
It's dynamic. You're looking at the chord you're on. Once you've landed on that, you look immediately to the next chord and how am I going to get there? So you're connecting dots rather with ukulele. You just play a chord, then you hold there till the next one. It's very static in that way, or it can be, you know.
And Perry's taught me so much, you know, with the bass, you can do, you learn about your triads. You learn where you're, and the bass, the tuning, oh my gosh, it's heavenly. Because it's all even all the way across. Ukulele differs on the two center strings. So it kind of has been a little bit of a stop for me. But on bass, what I play here, I lean back. I can play the same thing on the next string. So it's a little more intuitive as well.
Right.
But you learn your triads, and then you learn your chromatic walking into the notes. And then you learn these different rhythmic things you can do, which adds so much to the song.
I want to circle back to that part where you're saying Perry has taught you so much about something. You were getting ready to...
Perry's taught me so much about the bass. about how to play it. I felt pretty insecure at first. It's so different than ukulele for the reasons we said. And Perry said, well, here, I'll write out a tab. And then as we're doing it, I'd be like, wait, what chord is this? What note is this? Oh, E-A-D-G. Oh, okay, so that's an A note. And you just have slowly gone through. And so I will say with a lot of pride, with our academy... online music school that we're doing now, we have an open mic once a month called the Starlight Open Mic for students, just so that they can get practice performing in front of other people. And we had one of our students come and visit for this last Wednesday night, and he had sent some music ahead of time, but I didn't read the footnotes very well. And right on the top, it said, Danny plays bass.
Danny plays bass.
And it was Walking After Midnight.
Mama plays tenor. No, what was that song?
Daddy played bass.
Mom played tenor.
But he shows up and he goes, okay, let's go. And Perry goes, you're playing bass on this. And I was like, what? All we had was a lead sheet like we do with every strum along. And I actually went through and went, okay,
just
well,
took her 5 minutes.
Let's
and then
see
she just,
if I can do this.
Just, yeah, it was very pro.
Three chords. Cool. But yeah, it was, and we aced it. That was pretty fun.
There you go.
It was an open mic ace, though. It was, you know.
It was fun, and that's the whole point.
I mean, we were probably the best ones at the open mic.
So let's talk about your academy. Tell me all about it.
Well, the pandemic hit, and I've been teaching a class in person for 7 years, and we went online. So it was April 2020. First thing we did was blues. And we invited everybody from my email list to join us. So all of a sudden we had a few people from New Mexico tuning in, Arizona. And then as people purchased ukuleles online from us, we gave them a pass in to check it out.
Hey, that still stands. We still do that. And anytime you buy a ukulele from Danny Joy Music, you get a one month all access pass to our academy. See if you like it.
Well, and we say all access now because it started with one class. And then when we realized that the pandemic was going to be continuing, we decided we would add another class. And we've gone up to six classes.
And then I said, hey, Danny, I want to teach a class. Let me teach a class. And so I started teaching classes. And then we have...
based on what he loves to do, which is the jazz music.
And blues, jazz and blues.
And then I'll do some of the easier classes. And Perry started doing some of the intermediate classes. We started asking the students every month, what are you guys into? What do you want to do? What do you want to learn? And so now we've got finger style on Mondays, two times a day too. We have 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. because we wanted to hit everything from Hawaii to Europe and Australia for the time zone.
So you're doing these live?
Mm-hmm.
These are live Zoom classes. Yep, it's a 3-week course each month. And people can purchase just one class, which a lot of people do. Like we have Daniel Ho as a celebrity guest coming up next month for the Pineapple Mango Fingerstyle class. So people will just get that one if they want. Or just for a little more, you can have access to any class you want. So you get all of the Zoom links and you can jump in and out if you're curious about bass.
You can go to, yeah, you can go to all of them if you want to. Or you can go to one or you can go, you know, none. It's totally up to you.
Yeah. So we've got fingerstyle, which is a lot of chord melody solos kind of stuff. Even like how to form your own. I've done it all levels now. We have blues on Tuesdays, jazz on Wednesdays, bass and beginners on Thursdays. And and now we started pairing with the duets and offering an academy discount for couples. Mm. Because one of the things that we wanted to do was get people playing with each other. That's right. One of the hardest things is when you don't have a teacher there to help guide you, you can start bickering and you start getting irritated and everything starts kind of falling apart. So we're designing our classes now to include that kind of element. Yeah.
And so for bass, what we've done, since we know usually the beginner, the person in the couple who hasn't been musical, winds up being the bass player. No offense to bass players. One truth about bass is that you can become... You can play something that's musical and that supports a ukulele and sounds great really quickly. Mm-hmm. So the way we've been organizing, at least our best bass classes are organized in terms of complexity. So we've got a level, you know, a very, very simple level and then where it's just whole notes and then we'll play, you know, teach them the ones and fives and then some walking ideas. And then we blend the ones and fives with walking ideas and then level, I think level six or something is soloing on the piece.
How do you approach the right hand?
The right hand.
I mean, do you give them suggested? I mean, there's several styles of right hand playing of the bass. Is that included in the classes?
It is. We talk about. I mean, I always hearken back to the ideas. Okay, you know, whatever feels comfortable is fine for you with the bass. Most people, I do this. I play the classic like finger style, you know. And we have suggestions, but anything is fine. If you want to play with a pick, you know, some bassists might poo-poo that, but I personally think it sounds great. Carole Kaye played with a pick.
McCartney plays some of his stuff with a pick. They both did okay for themselves. So
certainly, yeah. They're James Jamerson, who's up there in the probably in the top three with those two, only used his index finger. So I talk about just that. Using your index finger if you're playing whole notes or half notes or even slow quarter notes, just so you can have a real consistent tone. You know, it's a lot easier to achieve a consistent tone when you're using the same finger than if you're alternating back and forth. So we talk about that. And
fun thing for me with the duets and Perry, I think, you know, I come from the background of strum-alongs. Perry, it didn't have a lot of experience with that.
I avoided the strum-along. When Danny and I met, she was leading a lot of strum-alongs, and I...
Right.
Well, because at a strum-along, you know, a lot of time, you're there with 60 people, and you, a lot of time, they kind of, for some of the songs, they take the sexy out of it. You know, because
it's the social aspect. It's what I've always said, you know, ukulele strum-along groups are like book club or bridge club. You just happen to be using a ukulele instead of cards. So it's a different animal. It's certainly a great part of the community, but go ahead. I'm sorry. I cut you off.
That's okay. Yeah. So stuff like we just taught Diamonds on the Soles of Her Shoes by Paul Simon. I've always wanted to do that song. It's hard to sing and play, but that's one of the things that sort of comes natural to me. So it's fun for me to do. But we took that and the bass line's actually pretty complicated. But Perry goes and listens to it and he took some of the complication out of the bass and did it on the uke. So it's brought up several octaves, but then the bass keeps this nice simple bottom section and then the top and the bottom and the top. So we're actually able to do that African rhythm when normally people don't play that song at a strum along, because you end up having to turn it into a 4-4 kind of thing, because that's people just go down and up and that's it. But when you do these duets and you actually learn a small section, it's actually a simple little pieces, but when you put them together, you know, but by themselves, they don't really make a lot of sense. Once you tack them together, then you've got this pretty complex sounding song. You have increased your musicianship, your skill set, by being able to listen to someone else do something different than what you're doing and still play on top of them.
And that's really exciting.
It's so much fun. Oh my gosh.
It's like singing harmony or something. Whenever when you can, you're doing something, but you can hear somebody else doing something else, and you can really feel that the two parts are greater than the just the sum of their parts. It
can,
one of the most thrilling ways to play music, I think, is to
it can be
work
challenging,
an ensemble though, where two voices are doing two different things.
It can be challenging to learn. And so one of the things that we've done now that we're online, oh my gosh, Perry puts everything into a guitar profile, which is an online program where you can create PDFs of your music, but you can also do a playback. So you can change it to any speed you want. And we always give that to the students. But for people who don't have Guitar Pro, Perry makes these audio tracks at various speeds.
So you get MP3s at progressive speed, so you can play along slow and then a little faster, then a little faster, then a little faster. And we give you tab and sheet music
for those who
read
it.
Whatever you want.
And we go through some of that in class. We don't get too much into the details of how to read music. Although I've been asking my students, if I have enough people email me, I'd be happy to do a class on how to read music as an adult. Because I didn't start learning to read music till I was 27. So it, you know, it's not something you have to do only as a child. But with these tools now, they get the video from class, they get a practice video some of the time when necessary, and then they get the audio tracks and the guitar profile so they can change it to whatever speed they want. They can loop small sections. So people are having more success now, I think, than, well, that's the feedback we're getting anyway. They're progressing faster.
So tell us how to get there. How do you get information? Website, you know.
Well, go to DannyJoyMusic.com.
Yeah, /Academy.
DannyJoyMusic.com.
Yeah. There's a little tab that says Academy, I think.
It is. And all of our demo, we do a video demonstration of each class that we plan to teach. So right now it's all filled up with the May classes. We're offering 5.
And you can email us also at DannyJoyMusic@DannyJoyMusic.com.
Or support.
If you want to get in touch that way.
support@DannyJoyMusic.com.
That's another way. If you do that, then we both get the email. Otherwise, just Danny gets it.
Yeah. No, that's great. That sounds like a really comprehensive approach. You're giving a lot of things that don't normally come with.
Yeah. We also have I think we have one open mic a month or two.
We host one at the time, but it seems like people are pretty excited about it. We might end up adding another one.
So we have open mic, and all of our students have gotten to know each other and they've become friends. So
We're international now. It's just fun, man. And so a bunch of them just came to our weekend retreat that we hosted, which is virtual, which was so much fun. And they're all excited when we finally get to do it in person. We're going to be planning one of those. And they'll all kind of know each other already.
Yeah. No, this sounds like something worth checking out. All of you people out there, DannyJoyMusic.com.
Well, when are you going to stop by, man?
Yeah, I will. I've got to dive in there. I mean, everything's changing right now. And we're trying to figure out how to come back out of the underground bunker. I've been under my school desk with a newspaper over my head for, you know, over a year.
Uh-huh.
And I'll have to dive into the open mic too. I mean,
have you gotten your microchips yet?
I had the microchip embedded in me 7 weeks ago now. And every time I look at my Mac, my brain says, sell it and get a Microsoft Windows machine. So I don't know what that means. Bill Gates
I see.
I see.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
He's in my elbow, I think, now, because
he's in there, yeah. Huh?
A little tiny, tiny.
Isn't there a movie about
clone.
That with Martin Short?
There's actually little tiny clones that they put in there.
Yeah. So we're all set, ready to go. I've asked the people coming to Reno to we are keeping a cap on attendance this year just so I can spread out chairs in the rooms and be over cautious. But you know, for people to come if you're vaccinated, if not, wait, wait till next time. We're looking at the light at the end of the tunnel here.
So
many people, me included, fall back on open cowboy chords when there are so many variations and things that can just expand the sound that's coming out of the fingers. Can you, in just a minute or two, give a beginning first step piece of advice on how to break out of the standard chords and start experimenting, certain types that you would start with or anything?
Well, the first thing is you got to get good and bored with the cowboy chords. So once you're in that place, my first step of going up the neck was my G7. You could play a regular G7, as you know, as a little triangle. If you bring that up by 2 frets, so that your index is on a G note, and then you let your other 2 fingers go 1 fret longer, then it would be open 5-3-5. That is also a G7. So that was my very first foray. You don't even have to lift your fingers off the fretboard. So if you're strumming a G7 for a while, you can slide them up 2 frets and let your other 2 fingers go to another fret, and you've got another G7. So, I'll give you an example, but so here's, and then, so that was my first, she's just like your fingers are little skates that just slide along. So if I'm strumming a G7, and then you go on, and then I added one more when I really wanted to make that big jump, and that's 7-7-7-8.
And you could play the open G with that one too.
So that's your D7 shape on the 7th fret?
That's correct. So together, I just kind of, that was my first step into learning how to do, and then I went into doing all 4 strings. You learn, the B flat can be brought up by 2 frets for the C. Now that can be taxing on some people's hands. So since I met Perry, and I'd seen it at some wonderful workshops by different people, I've learned now that, and Daniel, in the way he writes his music, you don't have to play all 4 strings. And it doesn't, it's not called cheating. It's called playing smart. And you get all kinds of different voicings that you could never get if you had to cover all 4.
And you usually have a few fingers left over.
To add
if you're not
melody.
Playing all 4, and you can add little bits of melody there.
And you can find little groupings of chords up the neck. So now I do, like, you can do on the lower 3. There's my C, and if I just flip 2 fingers, there's my G.
I would add that, the key to playing this way is that if you're not going to play all 4 strings, you have to focus a little bit on right hand articulation. So either, calculating your strum more carefully, or taking a foray into maybe finger picking or finger pinching.
I always have said that ukulele is taught backwards. It should start with muting the neck and concentrating on the right hand, and then adding a couple of chords, because there's some spectacular sounding guitar players that are playing regular chords, but their right hand is so good that they can do what they want with it. So,
yeah.
I think you're right there. And the other thing I want to say is, you're saying like sliding up the B flat shape. I actually teach new people who struggle with B flat to just play D, that shape on the 5 for the D, and on the 3 for the C, because it's easier. You're farther away from the nut, the strings push down easier.
Yeah.
and your hand is like, it's like lifting a 1 pound weight to start to get, you know, in the gym when you're wanting to lift a lot, you start light. So what you're saying is cool there. But what about variations of chords? What about not just doing a G seventh in three positions, but actually doing a ninth or, you know,
yeah,
something like that? What's the first step in going to an out of the ordinary chord?
Learning when.
Learning a song. Like I learned Autumn Leaves. And so I learned my G9 there, or my F9, which one fret higher is a, you know, two frets higher is a G9.
Right.
I learned a lot of my chord shapes just by learning new songs. And it opened my eyes, and then I found Fred Sokolow's book, Fretboard, A Roadmap for the Fretboard. And it's a little complex in there as you go along, but once you read through it and you find the shapes, how they connect to each other, then once you know the B-flat shape connects to this other shape, which connects to another shape, and it's the same B flat all the way up the neck. Then you start going, I want to play my D differently. Okay, well, I know that this is how it is with a B flat, so now let me find another way to play my D on my own without having to Google a chord.
So Doug, were you asking, like, okay, how to play those chords or what those chords are, or were you thinking...
No.
When they're appropriate.
Okay, so I was just watching an interview with James Taylor. And he plays a lot of D shapes and E shapes in his music, but he has little variations of them that if you really listen to his stuff, they're trademarked to his sound. If you looked up a song of his in a cheat book, it would give you D, E, A, B minor, stuff like that. But he's not playing those. He's doing little variations where he'll move one finger or two fingers or something like that. And I guess the analogy is if you're playing an open tuning, you're not getting true, unless you're just barring. If you're playing a shape in an open tuning and moving it up the neck, you're substituting this cool, different form of a chord for the major chord.
Yeah.
So what I'm asking for is just, it's an experimentation and it's a process and all that, but do you have a starting point for that where you would?
I would learn the melody. Okay, learn the chord, learn the basic chords. You know, the basic chords are the triads, right? If you were to look something up on the internet, it would have C, like you said, C, F, G, etc., C, D, or something like that. And then once you've learned that, use your ears and learn the melody, right? So this would be a C chord, right? Like Danny teaches sometimes Girl from Ipanema, right? So it's got this melody note and this one, right? So now I've got this. What do I have? What's this chord? It's a C, it's an E, it's a G, and then it's a D. So that would be a C add 9. So you got to use your ears a little bit, and then it goes, and then it plays this note,
right,
which is a B. Now you've got a C major 7.
Bring the melody in a little bit.
So I would learn the chords, then learn the melody, and that can be a guide to what alterations are appropriate for the chords you're playing. So you could, I mean, if you were strumming, you go, you know,
colorful.
and then there's the melody note again. So
right.
If you're going to alter your chord, sometimes the map can be the melody.
Okay.
And one more book, Fred Sokolow, Jazz Substitutions. It's not just for jazz, but he lays that out. He shows you a really simple version of a song with cowboy chords. And then the very next page, he shows you a complex one, and then he just breaks it down by measure. There's very little like noise, descriptive noise and stuff. It's simply analyzing.
It's a ukulele book?
Yeah.
Well, the experimentation in music is endless, and I always like to throw questions out there just to get people thinking beyond the boredom.
That's a good name.
Of, of the, yeah.
Beyond the Boredom.
Let's do that. Let's do that in Reno. Let's do a class Beyond called Beyond the Boredom.
Oh my gosh, that's really good.
Yeah.
All right. And then you send me royalties. All right. So running out of time here, I'd like to finish with two questions. One, a couple of musical influences from each of you over the years, early on, you know, professional recording artist type of things.
Without a doubt, the biggest influence for me was the Tchaikovsky's Peter and the Wolf album, where they, you know, there's some narrator or something. I had this when I was three. My mom got this for me, and he would come in and say, okay, now these are the ducks. This, and the oboe represents the wolf or whatever. And then they'd play a little motif of each, you know, the clarinet was something or other, and the, you know. And then you would just sit there and you'd close your eyes and listen to that album, and you could hear the different animals and the different, and that was just a huge influence for me. I don't know if that was what you were looking for, but that.
I mean, there's no right or wrong. There's different influences for everyone.
Yeah, so that was enormous for me. And then, I mean, and this is pretty cliche, but the records that my parents had when I was growing up.
What about you, Danny?
Mine, I'd say, are mostly vocalists. Ella Fitzgerald was one of the first people I heard that changed my life. She taught me how to sing. And Fiona Apple, Radiohead, with their harmonies and their music that made you feel something with your whole body, kind of encapsulated me. And a lot of old jazz music, Nat King Cole, Frank Sinatra, and Tony Bennett. I got some albums from my grandfather when he passed away, and that started me out in understanding what people could do to make me feel something with their voice. And so that's awesome.
I think Fiona Apple did a version of Across the Universe.
Oh, unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Really cool.
That was a big influence.
And it's neat to hear female artists do something that was made famous by a male artist. Sarah Bareilles's version of Yellow Brick Road is staggering. I mean, I think Elton John said that it's not fair, she's done it better than me.
I love that song.
You know,
I think she did a good one of Dog of the Bay too, if I remember.
That's really cool stuff. Okay, and the last question I want to make regular on this podcast is, if you could go back to the beginning of your musical journey and give one or two pieces of advice to that person from your current person, what would that be?
That's a really good question. Why don't you go first?
All right, I will. I'll buy you a little time.
Okay.
Before I answer, I want to say that Peter and the Wolf is by Prokofiev. It's not Tchaikovsky.
Too late.
Now, if I could go back and tell my... Because I've thought about this a lot. Learn the piano would be the first thing I would tell myself. And the other thing I would...
I have had that same thought.
Yeah. And the other thing I would tell myself is don't concern yourself with whether or not people think you're cool. I stopped playing the violin in junior high school and switched to electric guitar. And I mean, that was great and everything, but I should have kept doing both. I really should have kept my violin, kept it up, because I really did enjoy it, and I wish I had the skill with it now that I could have had if I had even just played it now and again.
I would tell myself to just let it out. My it wasn't until my dad died that after my dad died, I cried like I've never cried before, and I cried from the very depth of my soul, and I screamed, and I wailed, And it would come out at the most random times. I was sitting out getting ready to go in to teach a class in my car, and I just couldn't stop it, and it just came out. And like from my belly button up through my mouth, you know, it was just like it was painful, but it was also releasing. So I think ever since he's passed away, I actually sing now with my heart, and really, I'm not afraid to show what's on the inside anymore. Perry really said it too. So worried about what other people are going to think about your art that you don't actually show them your art. You don't really show them exactly what you can do. Yeah. And you always leave the performance thinking, gosh, I didn't do a great job. And people go, no, you did a good job. And you're like, no, you don't even know. I did not show you the real me because I wasn't sure that you would accept it. So to myself early on, I would say, just relax, have fun. Don't take yourself so seriously and really let it out.
All right. So I think we've come to the end of episode 4. For more from these two, visit DannyJoyMusic.com or look into the upcoming Reno Ukulele Festival on playuke.net. We're almost sold out, by the way,
that's
fantastic.
Just shows that people have been itching to get back to being together and making music, which is a joyful thing to realize.
Well, that Reno Festival has always been my favorite festival. Mm-hmm. It's a fun one for sure.
Yeah.
I wanted to offer if for your listeners.
Sure. Go ahead.
Because you're listening to Doug's podcast, if you would like to check out the Online Academy.
Give them a code. Give them a secret code.
You can use the secret code of Doug50, capital D, and get 50% off of any class or academy membership that you'd like for the month of May.
Good through May.
Wow.
So email us with the secret code.
They can just go right onto the website and use it.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Doug 50, because I am 50 years.
That's why. No, yeah. In celebration of your upcoming 50th birthday.
Oh, my goodness.
And I want to thank you, Doug, because you sure. have been the origin of my your festival and working with you. And you've been so cool the whole time, putting me up on the stage, even probably before I deserved it. You gave me
when you weren't quite ready, but
several times
that was pretty.
You
nice,
just kept
man.
Giving me a chance and giving me a chance, and then I remember the day you said that performance on the stage with that original music is the reason why I'm going to have you on the big stage, and I was like, oh, Perry and I, we've done it, and so thank you for taking a chance on me and Perry. I really appreciate it.
Oh, sure, it's been a pleasure. Like I've said, you're a surrogate daughter of ours, and we have a few of them, mm-hmm. and you're right there. And with my kids so far away, you know, it actually was nice on a few occasions to have that connection with a younger, prettier, more talented version of humanity than me.
Thanks, Doug.
Hey, we'll see you in Reno. And one last time, DannyJoyMusic.com. And that's it for episode 4. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.